Molly was resting her head in her hands, and when she looked up to see who was coming through the station door, Jesse saw that she was bleary-eyed and yawning. "Anything happened last night?" he asked.
"Nothing. Garrison stayed in his office until about 9, then went home. I sat on his house until midnight. He didn't go anywhere. Bedroom light went on at 11, and I saw the TV flickering. When the flickering stopped and the light went off, I stuck around another half hour to make sure it wasn't a ruse."
"Good.
What's the old expression about the cobbler's kids going shoeless? Garrison's lawn was dead and the hedges overgrown.
And the contractor's house is always the one in the worst shape. How about the military records on Lee Harvey Vanderkamp?" That perked Molly right up.
"Funny you should mention that. I'm getting the runaround."
"I thought you had good sources, Crane."
"I usually do."
"What do you think it means?" She raised her eyebrows.
"I can't be sure, but my guess is Lee Harvey probably did either classified stuff or the dirty jobs we never get told about."
"I'll make a call," Jesse said.
"Anything on your front?"
"A lot." Jesse told Molly about the gun range, his visit with Gary Cummings Jr., and the murder scene he'd just been at.
"Holy shoot. You know, Sue trailed Leon Vanderkamp to a gated community in Swan Harbor. Want to take a wild guess at who lives there?"
"Who?"
Molly smiled and said, "The Cummingses. Sue couldn't trail Vanderkamp past the gate, but checked this morning before he came on."
"When I was at the murder scene, I realized two things that I should have realized before."
"What's that, Jesse?"
"How did John Vanderkamp get from the gun range to the Gull? And, if we're working on the assumption that his appearance in front of the Gull wasn't happenstance, how did he know Alicia was there?"
"You're right. Someone had to be watching her.
Check all the local cabs and car services. My guess is there won't be any record of him being driven from the range to town. Have we had any reports of abandoned cars in the restaurant or business lots in town?"
"Not for months."
"Then unless John W. Vanderkamp flew, someone drove him. Get as much surveillance camera footage from local businesses as you can."
"Okay, Jesse, but what am I looking for?"
He thought about it for a second. "Start with a green Jeep, and if you come up empty, we'll see." In his office, Jesse sat with the phone pressed between his ear and his shoulder, his right index finger hovering above the numbered keypad. Jesse usually wasn't a man to care about what the person on the other end of the phone would think of him, but this wasn't usually, not even close. He punched in the number and waited.
"Federal Bureau of Investigation, Special Agent Rosen speaking. How may I help you?"
"Abe, it's Jesse Stone." The silence that followed was as uncomfortable as silences could get. Abe had been a colleague of Diana's and had been in love with her for years, though nothing had come of it. Like Diana's family and just about everyone else, Abe held Jesse responsible for Diana's murder and for letting her killer escape. Of course, what Abe could never know, what all of them could never know, was that her killer hadn't escaped at all, and had died a very long and torturously painful death.
"What?" Abe said at last. "This have anything to do with what's going on in Paradise?"
"Uh-huh."
"It must be important for you to call me for a favor."
"You know it is."
"What is it?"
"We're getting the runaround with the military. We're trying to get a hold of Lee Harvey Vanderkamp's service records."
"Nice family, the Vanderkamps. If you like cockroaches."
"Cockroaches are what they are," Rosen said. "The Vanderkamps choose to be what they are."
"Good point.
I'll get those records for you."
"Thanks, Abe. I know you're not inclined to help me."
"She loved you, Jesse. That gets you some credit with me."
"Thank you."
"You ever think about her?"
"Every day when I get up in the morning, and every night before I close my eyes."
"Me too," Rosen said, then hung up the phone.